Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, rain is a gun. Fast to fingers, down, is a star.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for November 14th, 2023. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network or our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms or applications. You could follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing spot. You click the red box to sponsor this podcast. You can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joining alongside, as always, your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, how are you doing today? It feels like that we finally had the big Dragon Gate show we kind of were waiting.
I'm doing very well. I'm in a very good mood. I have a cranberry Sprite. I am watching the Pacers currently win a basketball game, although there's a lot of time left to be played. And we're coming off the heels of what I think have been two excellent weeks of Dragon Gate programming. You know, we obviously had Gate of Destiny last week, which you and I talked extensively about. We thought the Open with the Dream Gate match was one of the better Dragon Gate matches of the year. We liked the Brave Gate match. We liked the Twin Gate match. There was a lot of things that we liked in terms of the direction this company was going in. And then we come into this Cork and Hall show, which, you know, I didn't think looked thrilling on paper. I thought the undercard in particular looked a little weak, and I wasn't sure what we were going to get from a few of the matches on the show just because they were so obviously set up to be angles. And what we got was, you know, not the most exciting undercard, but we got some stuff on these Dragon Gate shows that has actually created a little bit of buzz between the semi-main event and the main event. There are people that are not always keen on modern Dragon Gate, whether I agree or not is irrelevant, that are enjoying the Cork and Hall matches, the last two on this show. So I'm in a very good mood. There was a lot to talk about this week, and I have no complaints.
Yeah, I feel like this Cork and Hall show that we're going to be spending the lion's share of the show this week talking about. This was the show from Thursday, the ninth. Case has the written review up on voicesofwrestling.com. I think that this show, in a lot of ways, is that typical Dragon Gate show that people would talk about from 2013 through 2016 about, like, okay, the undercard is there for what it was. I mean, like, we did have good undercards then, but I didn't have anything that I would call offensive. Some stuff actually I felt like over delivered there. And then we close out with the hot eight-man tag and the big angle coming out of the main event. It just was something where, like, we kind of were feeling like, at least I can only speak for myself, but for a while, it just kind of felt like we were building up to, like, this, like, one big moment that was going to kick off everything into the back parts of 2023 and looking into 2024. And I think with Big Hug, we got that moment. And if you look at how really the last 2.5 weeks have gone in the company, we are starting to see some movement on a unit shift level that was, I feel like, really needed. And especially coming out of Corkin with now Hyo with Luis Monte, I think we have to look at this as like, all right, we are they are used to like having a lot of plates spinning at one time, but at a certain level, we haven't had at least storyline segment, I would say, like this in a couple years. At least that's how it feels like to me.
No, and just to zoom out for a second, you know, you go back to World, and you have the unmasking of Vin Diamante, now Luis Monte, and so we all have this thought of what the next few months are going to look like. It turns out that he goes home. I still think it was to recover from an injury, but he goes home. Luckily, Dragon Gate sort of gets a gift. They get King of Gate. They don't need him involved, and so they're in this spot where, okay, they can focus on other things. You get the Shimizu story and the Minoru story, and they collide with one another, and you have the King of Gate finals. You go into Dangerous Gate, which I think we would all agree, okay, maybe not the best build there. We roll into September, and all of the focus in the company turns to TN Revolution. He has, you know, what, seven matches, and then he gets hurt and is still out for this extended period of time. And I told everybody when he got hurt, I said, you know, this is obviously not what they drew up. It's not what they want. It's not what I want. There could be a positive here, you know, in the same way that every box of Lucky Charms has marshmallows. This could be the marshmallows. And I talked about how in 2005, which we all consider to be one of the best years of the company, the first 6 months of that year were all done on the fly because Milano Collection AT left the company unexpectedly, and they had to rip up all their booking plans and kind of figure out things as they go, and it worked. And in the immediate aftermath to TN getting hurt, we came on the show and went, God, Dragon Gate's really boring right now. Like, we've covered this promotion for a long time. There are times where it's good. There's times when it's bad. It's never just boring like this. And they had that 4-week run or so where it was really boring. And then they locked in on Shimizu versus Kakuta, and Monte came back, and you started seeing D Courage, you know, get some momentum back, and it just all of a sudden things became interesting. And whereas the last few years, it seems like Dragon Gate, in a large sense, has built up to things, and then maybe that, you know, you're expecting a certain level of payoff, and it just hasn't happened, either due to injury or due to change in direction or whatever. This hit, and it hit in a big way. I am certainly not going to be the person to make these grandiose claims that Dragon Gate is back, because I don't think they ever went anywhere. I think that's very short-sighted. I think that's poor analysis. But we are coming off of a very good show and a very successful week at the box office. I want to talk about that real quick before I throw it back to you, Mike. I just want to note that, you know, after the poor number in Osaka for Gate of Destiny, they come in, they do 1356 at the Cork and Hall show. And the night before, on the Dragon Daya 5th anniversary show, they did a full house there, 404 fans. I saw photos of that show before the attendance was announced. I honestly thought there were more people in the building. They filled that place up on the floor. It's one of those buildings where, you know, Japanese wrestling, just for whatever reason, has these gymnasiums where the seating is on the floor. They don't really pull down the bleachers at all. So there was obviously room to cram more people in there. They just sold seats on the floor. And that place was packed. So a very good box office back-to-back shows for Dragon Gate.
And with that show up in, it's in Nagano Prefecture. I think it's technically in Suzaka, but it's really, that's the biggest place that they could find to get in to run the show, basically, for Daya. Being able to, like, I'm looking right now just population-wise around Suzaka, that's a significant population showing up to it. So
yeah. Suzaka City, I mean, they ran here in 2022, and I think they did like 300 fans for it. But, I mean, it's, you know, it's another one of those examples of Dragon Gate going to a tiny town. And, I don't think – let me look at the history of where they ran this city before. So they did – 2007, 2012, 2022 in surrounding areas, not even that place specifically. So this is, not a hotbed, but it is where a dragon dies from, and so they give it a little bit more love now.
Yeah, like the only other person that I believe is from just like his general area is Aita. And they haven't done Aita homecoming shows for like a decade or so.
That's a great point. I don't remember the last Aita homecoming show.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that when you look at and you're talking about how you make money in wrestling, at least Dragon Gate's the one company, though, that still very sticks to like the touring model, although All Japan's starting to tour a little bit more again, too.
Which... Yes, and All Japan did 1320 for their most recent Cork and Hall show. So Dragon Gate gets the edge, but you know it's essentially flat there, even Steven, on a loaded show that I'm going to sit down and watch at some point, because they did Doi versus Atsuki Aoyagi, and then the main event, Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi versus Galeno Del Mal and Hayato Tamura. I heard Hayato Tamura, who, of course, people listening to this show know he's the most over guy in Gleed. I heard he was excellent in that match.
Yeah, it's something where I All Japan's figured it out, I feel like.
All Japan's very interesting.
Yeah.
And people that have listened to this show know I like All Japan less than everybody else, but I'm also fascinated by them because whereas pre-Muda retirement tour, you know, Noah was doing some abysmal numbers in Cork and Hall, but they would do really well for these big shows. In All Japan, this I'm talking a year or two ago, even, you know, almost 3 years ago now, like All Japan didn't crush these big shows. They didn't tour a ton, but they would do these great Cork and numbers. They were kind of on par with what Dragon Gate was doing and what Stardom was doing. And now, I mean, All Japan seems to have real momentum. Nakajima, for however long he lasts there, and I hope it's longer than it seems like it's going to be, you know, he is, to me, appointment viewing whatever he does in All Japan, and I personally am finding enjoyment in this promotion more so than I have in a very long time. I like Doi, I like the fact that he's in there, I like that they're using Abe for the Junior Battle Glory tournament, and, you know, Miyahara and the Aoyagis, plural, Yuma and Atsuki, I think are both very, very entertaining.
Yeah, it's an interesting time there, and it's something where, as we kind of see more now, that we're approaching, I would say, almost not a full year of everyone just open touring and everyone just basically having blanket open restrictions, but we're getting close to that, and that's when I like go and I see, oh, Pro Wrestling Noah does this tour of Hokkaido for the first time in however so long, when really not very many people go up to Hokkaido other than like, okay, Gleek goes because T-Hawk's from there, but it's not the whole up there, and you're seeing like new buildings that they're starting to pack in. It's one of those things that you kind of, especially in areas like that, you kind of take note of, I felt like. But
the Noah thing is crazy real quick. I was looking at them yesterday. They've run 68 shows this year. 69 now, I think. That's
nice,
nothing.
Nice. Yeah.
I mean, that's nice. Oh, I hate to blow by that. You're right. Nice. I mean, Dragon Gate, that's what they've done since July.
Yeah.
I'm so intrigued. And it's, you know, it's 68 shows, 25 of which have been in Tokyo. They seem to have no local promoters outside of that market. And now, I mean, you know, they did 405 fans in Osaka number 2 a few days ago.
And it's something where I'm actually now like pulling up like their rotation case. And it is essentially, if they aren't running places where they run TV, it's not happening. Like it's something where, at least with Noah, when you say it's 29 shows, how many of those, like they've been doing this Monday Magic thing for just about a month, if not so. That's 6 more shows that are just that. So what you're really looking at maybe are 20 shows outside of Tokyo this year for them, maybe?
Yeah, it's crazy. And they have no buzz, and it blows my mind as somebody that has the interest that I have and is into the things that I am. Like, I knew Muto made a big difference in this company in terms of their Western viewing habits. I can't believe as soon as he retired, people were done with Noah. It blows my mind. I can't believe it. And I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying people should watch it. I've lost interest as well, but that's just because I'm not a Jake Lee guy and I'm not a Kiyomiya guy. And Goshi Ozaki was out, and now Nakajima's gone, and I'm not really into LJ Cleary, with all due respect. So it's just, they're such an odd promotion, but the way they shed Western viewers post-Muto retirement is really mind-blowing to me.
So for the interests of just being clear about this, if you take Yokohama out of it, it's even worse, really. But like, they do run Sendai, they do run Osaka, they do run Owate occasionally, but if it's not Tokyo or like the overall Tokyo area, when you include Yokohama, it gets pretty, or Kawasaki also, kind of not local, but like in the general region, I would say, case it gets, they don't run a lot outside of Tokyo or the major city.
And something we've talked about on the show that I don't think a lot of other podcasts that cover Japanese wrestling do, but something that's really important to note for 2024, the Nagoya Aichi Prefectural Gymnasium is going under, I don't know if it's renovation or if it's closing down. I think they're doing renovations on it, but it's going to be closed all year next year. So that is a huge blow to Dragon Gate, because as we've talked about, that is their seemingly best market. It's the market where they most rival New Japan. It is a shot for Gleet, because if you're going to bring in SB Kento, you would certainly want to be able to capitalize on his hometown market, and you can't do that in a mid-sized venue anymore. And for Noah, this is a spot where they run GHC Heavyweight Championship matches. So you're losing a mid-sized venue that actually really matters to that promotion, and so you're looking at probably less and less dates outside of Tokyo now.
Yeah, and it's where there is an argument population-wise that if you're starting a company in Japan, you're better off starting in either Tokyo or Osaka, just population-wise. But, man, that's just a lot of underserved, just, like, environments like Suzuka, like for Nagano, for Dragon Daya's hometown. I mean, like, this is one of those overall things that, you know, we talk about, like, oh, these people that get into wrestling that are from the smaller towns in Japan, it's not that they aren't seeing Noah and Noah's getting them into wrestling. And especially now, even more so now that there's very little wrestling on like easy to access TV in Japan right now. It's all either on Abima or behind like cable walls. So it's one of those things that stands out, I would say.
And look, it's crazy to me, just the lack of a footprint Noah seems to have within the rest of the country, whereas, you know, Dragon Gate, this is their bread and butter. All Japan continues to tour more and more. I you can tell me if I'm wrong. I don't get the impression that Stardom is doing gangbusters business outside of Tokyo. Like, I don't, do they do extremely well in Osaka? I'm not saying they bomb there. I'm not saying they don't have any sort of presence, but I don't know for sure. I mean, I don't feel like they're doing great anyways right now. I know they just had that brutal Korakuen show. It looks like their last Osaka number two show did 486. I mean, that's pretty rough. And that's just one show. Everybody relax. Not an indictment on Stardom as a whole. As everybody, I'm just, you know, free flowing conversation here.
Right. But, and that is also, interestingly enough, case, we know that like Dragon Gate and New Japan, they basically run Edeon or, you know, Osaka. If not back-to-back nights, it's usually within the same weekend for like the last decade. That's always been the thing. Stardom has their Edeon Arena Osaka show coming up this week.
Okay, all right. I'll be curious to know what that does. You know, something we didn't talk about last week, because I don't think it's worth noting. I don't think, had this not been the case, Dragon Gate would have done 3,000 fans in Gate of Destiny. So I wanted to avoid the conversation entirely, because it's just hard to balance not making it look like an excuse, because I don't think it is. It was noted to me, and again, we talked last week, there was a number of Voice Gate listeners at the show, people that I trust that live in Japan, that go to a lot of Dragon Gate shows, that offer very good insight into this podcast. They did note to me that they were playing Game 7 of the Japan series with a Kobe-based team and an Osaka-based team.
Oh, yeah.
As Gate of Destiny was going on. And the way the person described it was like, look, it wouldn't have mattered if the fucking Beatles were playing in Edeon Osaka when Gate of Destiny was going on. The country was focused on Game 7 of the Japan series. That was the biggest deal there was. Again,
yeah.
I don't think it makes a difference to the Dragon Gate number. I still think they would have done that, but I was reminded by two different people, it was heavy, heavy competition in the local market.
And I mean, I would say like maybe not like the difference between the 2400 and the 3000. Like, I think that that's you can't say that, but maybe 24 and 2450, maybe. Like, I think that's because like, Case, I know that you basically keep surface level on the NPB. Like, the curse of Colonel Sanders is now lifted. Like, this is like the big curse in Japanese baseball was happening.
I was talking to somebody who lives in that area who was just going, you don't understand how big of a deal this is. You know, this was what everybody was paying attention to. So especially after just listening to a podcast with someone whom I respect, but somebody who was wanting to credit a wrestler with drawing records for shows they weren't on, I certainly don't want to get into this argument of, well, you know, they actually would have done better if they weren't going against baseball. No, if the main event was hot, they would have done a better number. But I'm now very curious to see what Stardom does without the heavy, you know, at the very least, they probably killed a lot of that walk up that night with the Japan series going on. Game 7 and two local teams and a big curse at stake. It was sort of a perfect storm for, hey, we're probably not going to get a lot of people just waltzing up to the venue tonight.
Yeah, and it seems like that is something, now that I'm really thinking about it, that like I never bring up when it happens, just because it just always feels like it's just like, of course, their luck. It does seem like that. How many big shows go by? They're like, oh, there's a typhoon this day. There's something. there's been something. I feel like for Dragon Gate, at least for the last 24 months, and that's outside of COVID, of course, like the biggest walk up killer of all. That I feel like that every big show I would hear, or we would hear, it's like, oh yeah, no, we couldn't really set up the merch tents outside of World Cannon Hall because there's a typhoon. Or something happening like
that's something. Next time we have Jay on, which I think you and I are going to do in January, so everybody mark your calendars. We need to talk about that. There does seem to be a recurring theme of like, hey, this one time worldly event happened in the market. Dragon Gate's running for a big show. It is going to kill the walk up business.
yeah.
I hadn't even thought about that. You're right though.
But the one thing that I would argue has not killed off walk-up business coming off the heels of the Cork and Hall show. Well, Case, you made sure, above all people, I was always had in the back of my mind, I've always been pro Big Cat on this program, but Case, you were the one who was always making sure everyone says, like, you need to understand, Hio and Monte, they have a deep friendship, and keep your eye on it. Lo and behold, what do we have coming out of the Cork and Hall main event? The 4-on-1 Luis Monte versus Z Bratz match. Shun Skywalker, Kai, Hio, and Ishin. But Hio turning on Z Bratz in the dying moments of the match, costing Shun the match. It was a powder attack gone wrong, as a lot of these Dragon Gate turns tend to be, going straight into a slingshot Hurricane Rana for Luis Monte, taking down Z Bratz in the post-match. It's clear these two are aligned. They're going with Big Hug right now because of the Big Hug that Ishikawa on Japanese commentary was going, oh, Big Hug. Did you see that clip, Case?
I did, yes.
Yeah. So we're going with that going forward. We do have for the upcoming Cork and Hall show coming up. I believe it's the first on this in December, but the first Cork and Hall show of December. We have two matches announced off of the heels of that. It is the December 5th Cork and Hall show.
December 5th, they're in Hokkaido, the first, second, third.
Yeah, but we have two matches for that show. Luis Monte does not get his hands on Shun Skywalker so easily. He gets Kai, and Ishin puts the Brave Gate on the line against Hio, who points out pointedly, he is under 82 kilos, so if you want to fight him, you're putting the belt on the line as well.
I thought all of this was just excellent. And look, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, put it in the fucking Case Was Right folder. I told everybody for 6 months, Hio and Monte are going to be teaming with one another when they both turn face. And I felt very strongly about that. I felt like I had a lot of information that was pointing in that direction, that those guys were going to be teaming with one another once this face turn happened. And it happened in the most satisfying way possible. I mean, this felt like one of the most memorable moments of the entire year. not quite on the level of, say, the Dragon Daya unmasking for a few years ago, but if we look at the 5-year period, as we continue to do, you know, whether you want to go 5 years and the change in ownership, or you want to go 3 years in terms of when Ryo Saito got the pencil, you know, we've talked about the eras lately and the memorable moments and the memorable matches, and this is certainly going to go up there. This Hyo babyface turn was just done perfectly. It was exactly what it should have been. I thought the way the match was laid out was brilliant. I thought the turn was brilliant. I thought all of this stuff was so good. It ended in a satisfying way, and it feels like these two have a team, have real, genuine momentum.
It's something where I think that with Hyo, at the very least, I think some credit has to be given to knowing, like, yes, executing the turn is always such a big thing in Dragon Gate and being able to like get the crowd investment into it. But I think him jumping into Monte's arms, like that takes it up like a whole notch or two to a level now that for as long as if this thing really does have the wheels to it that we think it does, that they can refer to this now pretty much now for the rest of Hyo's career, doing that jump up with us. It plays off very well. Now with Yoshiki Kato joining Zebra, it's removing Hyo. You are starting to evolve that heel unit into something where I still think we think that there's some shakeups to be had there, but we now leave Cork and Hall and this really 5-week period since Monte coming back. And I think we take a step back and look at it. And I think these last 5 weeks have been exactly what the promotion has been needing after everything kind of not necessarily always been the spiciest when the attention's been on certain aspects of the promotion. As you were talking about pulling it back to here, now we take the step back and what else can Luis Monte and Hyo do to help reverse the tide? It seems like they found like the way to get the Cork and audience as loud as that as we've heard in years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've got momentum because, you know, they're going to have this match on the 5th where they've got the two singles matches. I don't know if they're doing Doi Darts or something fun on the second Cork and show of the month, or if they'll do, you know, a Hyo Monte tag. You can run another one in January. They'll probably get a third guy. You can run a trios match or an 8-man in February. It just feels like we are trending in the direction where Monte is going to be the focus of these Cork and Hall shows. And I think that's the right move, because I think you look at him in this building going back to that July Cork and show where he came out with Ultimo, announced that he wasn't doing King of Gate, but that he was going to come back and Dragon Gate was his home. Cork and Hall is now his home building. This seems like a spot where, and I don't even think this is a dig on Kakuta, but Monte is kind of your main event guy now. And I think the promotion, given the number this show did, I think they should absolutely be embracing that. I think going forward, we need to see Monte and Hyo in these main events until otherwise noted.
And it's something that, just so everyone can kind of get a sense of this, Luis Monte is not on the Okinawa tour this weekend, so that it's back to Kakuta and D-Courage up top, because that's what you kind of have to do with that. So it is something that I feel like we'll see even more stark kind of compare and contrast this weekend, at least with the obvious tenor that it's an Okinawa show and you have all that stuff that happens with Okinawa.
Though those shows look rough. I'm glad those are not on the network.
Yeah, like we know a year ago these shows would be, and boy, I'm right now looking at some of the shows, and my gosh, because this is going to be a rough watch. I'm glad we're just going to get a digests of it.
Yeah. Oh no, it'll be palatable that way. Yeah, it's a rough looking time. Let me ask you, in regards to Monte, I think you and I are both on the same page that when you talk about the foreigner Mount Rushmore, you know, it's Ricochet, Pac, and Monte in some sort of order. And then you want to go Jack Evans, you want to go Rich Swann, you know, you want to go Bandido or Flamita. I think those guys have a question there. But let's talk about the top three here. Just off of this moment alone, this Cork and Hall closer, which comes off of a year where Luis Monte has been in a number of massive moments, where does he rank historically with Ricochet and Pac? And if he's not at the top of the list, what is going to help him surpass those guys in your eyes?
Okay, so next year, we'll have a long talk about Ricochet and his Dragon Gate tenure. Like, we're coming up on an important anniversary in 2024. So, I think the real, like, kind of positioning right here, at least for me personally, for the near term, Pac is number one, and that's cemented. Just for the near term. That's not something that cannot be reassessed in a couple of years down the road after Monte gets this run. But at this moment, it's really, you're talking about him and Ricochet. And Ricochet doesn't have this kind of emotional moment. It is something where, yes, he was a part of Monster Express and the Team Best Friends thing, but everyone knows who Tozawa was really excited about, right? Like everyone knows it was Uha, it wasn't Ricochet. And I think that that's something that will have him, like, at this point where I do think he lags behind Ricochet, if only just because of counting stats, for lack of better terms, Case. I think that he has the intangible that he'll be able to cross by Ricochet pretty quickly on those counting stats, whereas Pac is still a little bit in the distance in my mind.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think, like, okay, so Monte has this great moment. What's the Ricochet equivalent of that?
I mean, that's the hard thing. Like, is it him joining Monster Express? Is it, like Tozawa was saying, it like
how did he get there? I don't remember how Tozawa, was there an angle or did he just kind of show up in orange one day?
Oh, this was all after how miserable Tozawa was after he got kicked out of Mad Blanky. And
okay.
He was teaming with his friends, which were Shingo Takagi and Uha Nation. Uha comes back in this big Team Best Friends versus Mad Blanky thing when he's still a member of Mad Blanky and he refuses to fight his best friend. And that's how Uha joins. Do not remember Ricochet whatsoever.
Yeah, interesting.
There just isn't that moment for him.
No, because it, like, he won the Triangle Gate belts on his first tour, but it was a victim of circumstances. It was Final Gate, it was Warriors International, and I don't have a fond memory associated with that. The Brave Gate match where he beats Pac in Osaka is a great match, but it's not like, it wasn't like he was a made guy. You know, the Yoshino thing, I think, feels important to us, but it doesn't have that, like, oh my God. Like, it's not a moment that I don't think Dragon Gate fans really think of fondly, you know, universally.
We think of it as the encyclopedia entry for the first foreigner to win the Dream Gate.
Yeah.
That's it.
I was just thinking a few days ago, because I keep on saying, like, the Tozawa stuff on my timeline, and then I'll see Ricochet do, like, a moonsault, and they're like, man, Triple H is really letting him cook. And it hit me. He's been in WWE so long now.
Yeah.
I think there are people that listen to this podcast, or, like, people that listen to Rich and Joe or Jesse Collins, like, smart, intelligent wrestling fans who don't know that Ricochet was, like, really the best wrestler in the world for, like, 5 years. Like, it's hard to explain what 2014 Ricochet was and then what 2016 Ricochet was. Like, he did it twice where, you know, MVPs in sports, like in the NBA, MVPs are often built on narratives. And there were two different years where Ricochet was like, it's mine, guys. Like, I'm actually going to go all around the world and just take all these titles and win all these tournaments. But he's been gone for so long now, I don't, like, there are people that have never seen, like, good Ricochet.
So, 2014 was the thing I was alluding to with Ricochet. There might be a show miniseries or something coming about that in the next year. But it is something where, like, he has the accolades and the counting stats. And at one point, you could argue that if you are talking counting stats and kayfabe, by and large, no one had as a successful calendar year in wrestling as Ricochet had in 2014. Like, it's just, he won so much. Like, essentially is what that boils down to. But he doesn't have these moments. And I think some of that also is the way that he was teamed with Shima in a very protected role that no one has ever been kind of baby birded as much as a wrestler as Ricochet was by Shima.
And no, I'm gonna talk about it in the next segment. Actually, there's a Shima Ricochet moment I want to talk about.
Yeah. Let's put a pin in that part of it. But like
baby birding, by the way, is a great way to describe that.
I mean, there's no other way.
It's right on the money.
There's no other way. But I guess like the thing that's going to be so interesting about this with Monte, as we compare and contrast him against the other two, is Ricochet, we kind of saw essentially like coming in Spike Mohican's Ricochet to the point where he was Dreamgate champion, and then he was bigger than, and then came back and stopped by, but it was not necessarily doing the big steps in front of the hometown fans. But all these things happened and people would hear about it because it was Ricochet of Dragon Gate, and he would have the dragon mark next to him doing it, but it was not happening in front of these fans. Pac leaves, goes away for essentially 7 years, and you don't see the transformation with it. With Diamante, or with Luis Monte, we get to see it play out in front of us. We've seen it happen in front of us since 2020, since 2019, since this guy showed up and we were going, what is this guy doing here?
He was horrible.
We said
he was maybe the worst foreigner they've ever brought in.
And we've seen him progress now to the point where last week in front of him was 1,350 fans in Cork and Hall. It was the loudest moment in the company in years. And yes, some of that is the fact that cheering and all of that. But case this is not a fan base that was known to be silent during the pandemic. We got to see something special there. And I think that in of itself is going to make the comparison of Monte versus Pac, Monte versus Ricochet, going to be so interesting over the next 18 months, because we get to see the elevation happen, play out in front of us, whereas we weren't necessarily given those moments with the other two.
So remind me again. So your order is Ricochet, Pac, Monte.
No, Pac, Ricochet, then Monte.
Okay.
And pretty big distance between Pac and Ricochet.
Okay, all right, I follow now. Yeah, I'm with you. Pac is my number one, and I think it's going to take a Monte Dreamgate run to maybe dethrone him there. I do really feel like Monte and Ricochet are neck and neck right now, and I'm kind of just waiting on that next thing, and I don't know what that is, but I think 3 or 4 months from now, something's going to hit us, and I'm going to come on and say, remember that conversation in November? It's happened, and Monte is now the guy that we have to look at as genuine foreign excellence. And, you know, I mean, Ricochet was not a shoe-in when he came over, but I think 2010, Ricochet was further along than 2019, Diamante. 2007, Pac was not a shoe-in, but I think he was further ahead than 2019, Diamante. The growth that this guy has made in less than 5 years is the greatest testament to, if you go to Dragon, you will get better.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I don't think there's a better way to describe him than that. Well, we were talking about baby bird in case, and I think that I'm just ripping the band-aid. We're not doing a fancy transition here. The other big story coming out of Cork and Hall last Thursday was the 8-man tag D-Courage versus Natural Vibes. The first 8-man tag for D-Courage as a 4-man group, as the show opened with the formal announcement, the formal invitation of Ryota Tanaka to join D-Courage. He does so and joins them in the semi-main event, D-Courage versus KZ, Jason Lee, Strong Machine J, and Jackie Funky Kamei. It is Kamei getting the win with a JFK out of a Jackie knife and looking like he was just one moment away getting pinned by the rookie upstart. And I think we have to just immediately talk about the rocket ship baby bird match that we got to see. Kay says, in one night, the company did it again, right? Tanaka is now a guy.
So this is what sets Dragon Gate apart from every other promotion. And you and I obviously, you know, have never stopped down and gone, this is what we like about Dragon Gate. This is why we do this podcast. But I think it's worth noting within the confines of this match that this match right here, forget the emotion in storytelling of the main event, where the main event was storytelling done right. It wasn't over dramatic. It actually had emotion to it, and it was just beautifully laid out. It's matches like this that, for a promotion, oddly enough, that is known for popping circumstance and moves with a Z and being fast moving and progressive, it's the fact that Dragon Gate does the little things that I think set them apart from every other promotion. And I think, and I'll go through a few different examples here, the thing that still sets this promotion apart, whether it's Shima's promotion or Shingo's on top or Yamadoi's on top, or now we see D-Courage on top, is that they are able to have matches like this. I don't think there's ever been a promotion in the history of wrestling that is as successful as anointing guys within a match. Because we knew from the opening sequence, this match was entirely going to be about Ryoya Tanaka, and it was a sink or swim moment for him. If he would have slipped on a dive, or if he would have been late on a transition, if he would have botched a roll-up, a flash pin sequence, okay, we would have known, he would have been exposed, and we would have gone one step forward, two steps back. But Tanaka follows in this lineage of Dragon Gate guys that are thrown into the deep end, and it turns out that they know how to swim. And this match was so special because in the lineage of great matches that we've seen this year, in the lineage of great matches to come, next year, 5 years from now, a decade from now, we are going to remember this match. They did something special with Tanaka here in the same way that on March 31st, 2006, the guys in Dragon Gate got together. They went up to Gabe Sapolsky and they said, watch, we're going to make Dragon Kid a star in this match. And then they did. In the same way that Shima baby birded Ricochet at Untouchable 2010 in Chicago, it was Shima and Ricochet versus Speed Muscle. And the entire match was, look at all of these things Ricochet can do. He is now a superstar. And it worked. In the same way that Takahiro Yamamura got the chance in 2017 to have a 20-minute time limit draw in match number two and then come back in the semi-main event and show his worth, he was a made man going forward. I don't think there's a promotion, especially in multi-man matches, that can do what these guys do. They push all of their chips in, and they have these little moments throughout the match. Mike, think about this. The match opens. They start off hot. D-Courage clears the ring, and Ryoya Tanaka does a huge no-touch tope to the floor. It is an immediate spotlight on the new guy, and he sticks the landing. As they go throughout the match, there's a great spot where Daya does a dive, and then Yoshioka does a dive, and then Kakuta does a hip attack. And again, they leave Tanaka in the ring to do his signature move, and he hits that Spanish fly, and he nearly gets the pin. The focus is all on him. And then they go to the finish, and even though Tanaka loses, the focus is on him, and he's hanging in there with Kamei, who might be the single best worker on the roster, not named Shun Skywalker. He's right there with him. It is impossible not to think higher of Ryoya Tanaka after watching this match, and they did it in such an interesting way. And here's where I want to compare it to other promotions before I kick it back to you. You think about the way that other promotions have elevated guys within the ring. In Noah and All Japan, and this is a generalization, but I think this is largely true, they get their ass kicked, and it elevates them up the card. Think about the Kenta Trial Series. Think about what Nakajima went through. Think about what Kiyomiya went through just a few years ago. There's not a lot of Noah matches because they come from the branch of All Japan where you have shining young guy doing great things in a match, and that makes him better off. What you have is shiny young guy gets kicked in the face as hard as he can, the crowd connects to him, and then you slow build from there. But it's never an example of like, oh my God, did you see Kiyomiya? Like, he did all of these great things. He went lockstep with so-and-so, and now he's a big star. That's not the way they do these things. In New Japan, it's so built off of the finish. Okada and Tanahashi in February of 2012, they could have had the same match they had. Okada could have done all of the same things that he did, but if he would have taken a high fly flow at the end, Okada's career just would have never been the same. You think about the G1 finals where they make guys, where they establish guys, where they set them on their way to headline Wrestle Kingdom. It's not what they do in the match. It's what they do in the finish. The finish is what matters there, possibly because they're, you know, the king of sport. They're supposed to be as lifelike as they possibly can. It's a matter of wins and losses. Dragon Gate, to me, and I'm curious as to what you think, is the only promotion that can make guys within the confines of the match win or loss. And it's not that one way is better than the other. It's not that one is right and wrong, but I just love what they do time after time after time after time. And Ryota Tanaka was just another example of that.
And I think a way that they accomplished this, and I think you're dead on with your points, is that how many times have we seen D-Courage versus Natural Vibes over the last 18 months? Like, essentially since Madoka Kakuta has joined D-Courage and they became a trio, that has been a constant match. That has been a match that they've run by almost every combination. They've added Dragon Kid in to make it an 8-man tag. They found all the ways you could do those sorts of matches. And you do all those matches in the house shows. You do them match 3, match 4 on Kobe, you know, not in the main event, but you do these matches so much and you get so familiar with each other to an extent that in a lot of ways, we got kind of two matches happening here. We got the Natural Vibes versus D-Courage match that we've seen upwards of 20, 30 times. Or we also have this interesting debut kind of breaking out of this guy getting plugged into this established formula and D-Courage throughout the match. And I thought that this was like one of the real brilliant things about the match, going like, oh, they aren't completely a flowing four guy group yet. You have Yoshioka and Kakuta going like, get out of the way, Tanaka, we're doing stuff here. Or they're like, okay, we're waiting for you to, that you could tell that this is a unit that's figuring it out there. And I find that so compelling that you don't have those opportunities for storytelling in the way that King's Road tells stories. As you said, you grow to love them by seeing them get the tar beat out of them, and you aspire for them to win. You get the catharsis through that.
Yeah, and it largely works. I mean, for Noah, it hasn't worked in 15 years, but it worked in theory, a long time. In theory, it worked.
There was a reason why everyone just went to Baba and was like, oh, he's a genius, because he figured out a very simple formula that people were going to buy into with that. But I think that you have so many things that kind of create the modern house style in Dragon Gate that I think that a lot of it, I think one of the reasons why this match got pulled off, though, goes back to the fact of how many times D-Courage would have faced off against this combination in a lead up to it. That allows them to hit all of their sequences perfectly, and that allows basically the eye to be drawn to Ryota Tanaka throughout the match.
I'm so interested, and I'm gonna try to send off some DMs. I don't know if they'll get answered or not, but I'm gonna try to ask around on Tanaka, because I think the way that he has been presented has been so interesting. Because I've harped on this, and I'll make it quick again, but like, you know, guy came in, had all this hype around him, but it's not like he was immediately thrust into the spotlight, and it's not like he was doing these crazy things. He was, you know, he was a guy that was showing a lot of potential and slowly getting better and better. He reminds me of, like, if you remember when the Bucks did their first Dragon Gate tour, they've talked about how they were so nervous before the tour because they're like, oh my God, like they go so fast, you know, how are we going to keep up? And then they realized after a few shows, it was like, oh, it's a formula. Like they plug and play, but there's rhythms here that we can keep up with. And I almost feel like in the same way, like, I don't think Kato got this treatment. You know, I don't think T and Revolution was going to get this treatment. I don't even think, like, you look at the class before, Kamei and Kabune and Kakuta, they were, I think they were thrown into higher impact, heavy intensity matches quicker. With Tanaka, they really let him figure out a sort of baseline, his own sort of rhythm, and then they plugged and played into Vibes and D-Courage, which is a winning combination no matter who's in Vibes, and obviously the trio and D-Courage. It just works every time. And Tanaka, you know, he's gonna join this illustrious group of successful multi-man matches now just by being himself. It seems like it's the perfect scenario for him.
So just for a point of comparison, I wanted to check this out here. Madoka Kakuta has been in 30 matches with KZ since he joined Natural Vibes. 30.
Jesus.
So, and it's something where the 2 days before this, they essentially had, if not the same match, everyone except for UT getting subbed in for Kamei. Like, they will do this match now on repeat. It's now the new touring match, I feel like.
It is. It is. And we go through different eras of this where, you know, they're going to trot this out to the tiny towns, and they're going to try to make something out of Tanaka in every market they've got, and they're in no rush. He's a young guy. He's got the rest of his career ahead of him, but, man, he's off to a good start. I mean, you know, credit to you. You've been screaming about D-Courage getting somebody new in the mix, and I don't think they could have found a better option than Ryo Tanaka.
And it's something that, I mean, we look at what Tanaka has done so far, and it's not for a lack of opportunity. Whenever he's been put in the positions, he's by and large done this. Just something that amuses me, Case. Ryoya Tanaka has a cage match profile. I still don't think Manarita has one.
Oh, well, we got to get on that then. Cage
oh, Manarita
match.
Come has
on,
one.
Okay, Manarita all right. No, you know who doesn't have one is Estrella.
I mean, does Estrella need to have one?
Well, I think he'd have a very interesting cage match profile.
that is very
Estrella,
true.
I was leaving work a few days ago, and Estrella posted a photo on his Instagram story that was at like 2 minutes away from my office. And I was like, oh my God, where is this short Japanese man? I want to say hi to him so bad. And I was like, he is breathing on me. He is so close to where I'm at. It's a shame I can't find him right now.
Yeah, so still does not have a profile.
Yeah, that's a shame, just because we're eventually, when he gets a profile, we'll fall into an Estrella wormhole and go, wow. So that's what the Midwest Indies were like in 2023.
So I'm enjoying this right now. If you couldn't tell, Case, people who still have, who are still listed on the Dragon Gate roster on Cage Match right now, I'll be quick. We're not going to take a lot of time.
Can I take some guesses as to who's there?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Naoki Tanizaki.
Naoki Tanizaki, not listed.
Oji Shiba.
Oji Shiba, 0 for 2. You're doing real good at picking people who are not on the roster.
Okay, here's the one that I want, and I'll stop guessing after this. I hope this person's still listed. Are you ready?
Yep.
Anthony Nice.
Sadly, is not like the Gayora website.
where, for those that don't know, Anthony Nice did one tour literally 10 years ago. It was October, November of 2013. And he had a profile on the Gayora website through like mid-2016. He just wouldn't get rid of his page.
I have basically up until Monster Express finally died, he was listed on profile. Like, I have Dragon Gate programs with Anthony Nice in it, like 3 years, like after Cruiserweight Classic appeared. So people on this profile page that will get a laugh out of Case. First off, Kenichiro Arai, naturally, he's on this profile page.
He's on the roster.
I mean, you kind of got to do that for him. And Anthony W. Mori, he's listed. I mean, he's a head of the front office, but he's listed on the roster. I do have a question about if they should really have Sora Fujikawa still listed on the roster.
He should be taken off that roster.
Yeah.
In my heart, he's still there. In my heart, so much potential, but not on the roster anymore.
Taku Iwasa, listed on the roster here.
a man still on the roster in your heart, but I don't think in all actuality.
I mean, has never left it, baby. I mean, what else is there to say about that? Getting back to the 8-man tag, I think the thing that really, talking about Tanaka taking the opportunities here, every single sequence ended with focus going towards Tanaka. The heat was not on Daya for the first time ever in a D-Courage match. It was on Tanaka, and Tanaka was great at playing babyface in peril. He's got it, and the crowd is going to latch on to it. I just really, the thing that got me on this was Yoshioka maybe found his special role as the big heater, like his hot tag here, Case.
Yeah, no, this was all, everything about this was great. I mean, I still marvel at just how good Kamei is. You know, it's another one of those things that's something we talk about a lot where, you know, if these guys worked in another promotion, I feel like they'd get more credit. And if Kamei was even a New Japan Junior at his talent level, I think people would just be salivating over the guy. You know, I think there'd be, you know, period at Tony Khan, when is Jackie Funky Kamei coming over? He's just not getting the right eyeballs on him. But, you know, I'm assembling the list of the best 50 wrestlers in the world this year, and Kamei's a top 20 guy. He just has to be. You know, you think about not only the great matches he's been in, but he's become the go-to glue guy. And it's funny, like, you and I, again, not to pat ourselves on the back, but we kind of nailed this a few years ago. We said, look, Kamei is turning into this generation's Genki Horiguchi. It doesn't seem like an accident that they're teaming together. And now Kamei is this generation's Genki Horiguchi. Like, they are, it's amazing how that worked out, isn't it?
He's big match Jack, and I feel like I've been, like, screaming that. And what it boils down to, essentially, and I it's a Dragon Gate being Dragon Gate thing. You take Jackie Funky Kamei, you put him on the Japanese indies, and I bet he instantly gets more of, like, a smattering of talk, I would say.
Easily. Yeah, oh my god, yeah. I mean, there was nobody on the indies other than maybe, I mean, I like Brian Keith, but Kamei's better. I mean, if Kamei was an American wrestler, people would, again, they think of him as one of the best wrestlers in the world.
But I would think if he was even a Japanese indie wrestler, we would probably hear a little bit more.
Just oh god, yeah. Oh my god, because the, like, and I say this with love, but, like, the Big Japan perverts, they'd be all about right. him.
Yeah, no.
The DDT people?
If he was an astronaut instead of Nomura, like, we wouldn't be able to go anywhere without hearing about that tag team.
No, and this is, I mean, like, literally no hate. Like, this isn't a knock on anybody. But he's better than Mao in DDT.
I mean,
you know, that's like the comp is, like, think about the buzz that he gets. And I think he's great, mind you. But Kamei's, you know, twice the wrestler he is.
Is Kamei better than Yuki Ueno?
I think so, but I'm not super high on him.
I'm high on Ueno. I think he is great. He is the first DDT young guy who I've actually, like, reached out and grabbed me when I saw him. But
I don't look at him. I guess let me clarify. I think he's fine. I don't look at him as, like, oh, that's a guy, like, I'm circling his name. I gotta watch all of his stuff that hits tape. That's just not where I'm at with anybody in DDT right now. But no, I mean, I think Kamei's better, but I at least think that one's a little closer.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of, like, how, do people watch DDT now? That's the thing.
I was just thinking about if I
could say something hyperbolic enough that people would actually, like, push back. But
big DDT match this year? Because I don't have any on my spreadsheet.
I think it's either Jericho versus Akasha or Brooks versus I liked Brooks versus when Brooks won the title, but that also requires a whole lot of Yuji Ito, you know, like a lot of Yuji Hino. Like, that's the thing.
And I was into that a decade ago. I'm not as into it now.
Yeah. It's kind of sad.
Okay, so I haven't watched a single Brooks defense, but it looks like it's a lot of Brooks stuff that got pimped pretty hard on Cage Match this year, kind of floating around that 8.0 range. But, I mean, maybe... Oh, I watched Brooks versus Higuchi. That was good. That was from May. I remember that. But it's not like, I don't think I'm ignoring DDT Rex this year. I just don't think there's a lot of them.
Yeah, that just seems to be kind of distinctly the vibe happening, at least over there with
but
that.
I would say other than Takeshita and maybe Higuchi, but it feels like, I mean, Higuchi was one of the best wrestlers in the world last year. I don't think he's done anything notable this year. And that's maybe on Higuchi. I think Kamei is better than that entire roster.
I mean, Endo is the one that I feel like, just sadly.
Oh, I think Kamei's better than Endo.
I think Endo doesn't get concussed, and we have a different conversation here.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's the thing.
Takeshita's who he became, and Endo was Endo, and I think that's kind of everything that needs to be said there. And granted, you know, maybe somebody had aspirations for North America and somebody didn't, but no, I mean, I haven't cared about Endo in a long time. I mean, you know, he peaks very high, but I have no interest in, like, the match-to-match life of Tetsuya Endo.
That's fair. Did you have any other big notes on D-Courage versus Natural Vibes? I imagine this will probably make the Gaora YouTube in pretty short order, I think.
Yeah, that's a great call. No, the only other thing I want to note is they're doing something interesting with Tanaka where it's kind of one of those things, take note of it now and enjoy the payoff later. I can't tell what direction, like, I don't know how they're going to pay it off, but this is two matches in a row where he's essentially lost just by being like a new guy. You know, he hits the Stardust Pressed on Ishin, and then Ishin rolls his momentum into a pinfall and he loses that way. And then here, you know, he hits a big suplex on Kamei in the middle of the ring, and then he goes to step over Kamei, and Kamei grabs him, jackknife, Tanaka reverses the pin, but then he gets caught, you know, Torbellino crucifix, and then he's done. It's two times in a row now where they've done a very specific, like, hey, Tanaka gets caught being oblivious, just be aware of that going forward.
And elsewhere on this Corkin show, we talked about that the undercard wasn't necessarily there, wasn't necessarily a deep undercard. We did have a big match five. We talked about it on the preview. Masaki Mochizuki versus Yoshiki Kato. Yoshiki Kato wins by disqualification as a injured junior hits the ring, throws off referee Yagi and tries to beat this guy's ass. He then in the post match afterwards, Junior really just decided that he's going to want to take on everyone, Case, after he comes back from this injury, it feels like.
Yeah, I did not see this coming, and I, you know, it's again, it's one of those crystal ball moments where it's like, okay, well, I want to know obviously what they would have done if Tien never got hurt, but now I want to know what they were going to do before Junior dislocated his kneecap, which sounds, by the way, like a terrible injury. Oh my God.
Yeah, that there are a few things to me that like sound like personally more horrifying than dislocating your kneecap. And I guess that really answers the question about that spot at Gate of Destiny.
Yeah, it's a real bummer because, you know, this year has been marred by injury, and I still think he's just been otherworldly. So it's a shame he can't finish the year with a big match. But yeah, you get Kato versus Mochi in a singles match here. Love the start where Mochi greets him with a straight right hand to the face, and it looked like that could have been the match. Kato comes back. Credit to him. He purpled the chest of Mochizuki with a few of those chops. And then right when Kato starts to get momentum, Junior comes in, beats him up with a crutch, beats up Yagi. And so we're not only going to get Junior versus Kato, obviously, at some point, but like you were saying, Junior laid down the gauntlet, and we'll get that father and son match eventually.
Yeah, so don't have an injury report on expectations. Just if you're getting a sense of mind, I think probably we won't see Junior again this year. January, I feel pretty confident about, I would say. But yeah, he basically says, like, I'm done with all of this. I'm done with getting turned on. I'm done with you, Dad, and I'm going to, when I come back, I want to take everyone on. I want a singles match with you. And big moment, and I think that really we were trying to figure out, like, M3K, we were at a point where, you know, Junior being out, everything kind of accomplished, Twin Gates off Susumu and Kanda, you could close up shop, and now we kind of have the last thing to do before M3K can go away, and that is Junior trying to kick his dad's ass.
It's excellent. You know, as we approach the 25th anniversary of the Dragon System next year, and you and I have a lot of stuff planned, you know, especially just with the history of certain units, I think M3K is a unit that I'm going to remember very fondly a year from now. And I think 5 years from now and a decade from now, it will also age very, very well. I love what they've done with this unit. I love what they've done for Junior. It's a shame. It seems like it's coming to an end by way of a Junior injury, but I am glad they're getting to this point because now I feel like they've gotten everything they can out of this unit.
Case, I'm going to age myself here. Have you ever seen 2007 Comedy Ode, Hot Rod?
Okay, that's a movie that is big with people my age, but it's right, also not, it's not a movie that I've seen.
Yeah, I was going to say like a Lonely Island plus Danny McBride slapstick fest really wasn't your thing. But the overall conceit about it was eventually Andy Samberg wanted to beat the shit out of his stepdad, played by Ian McShane. And I do kind of feel like now we are entering a phase where Junior's going to do whatever he can now to try to punch his dad in the face. And I'm here for that.
I'm into it. I really, really enjoy what they've done with Junior this year. As I've said, he's been interesting since the moment he debuted in this promotion. They've kept him interesting since the moment he debuted in this promotion, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, and it's something where I feel like you do these two matches, you're able to kind of put a bow on the M3K era, and now we only got glimpses of it, and it was always something that kind of came back and bit Junior. Like, other than like him leading the troops into Buyuden, there's not a whole lot of Junior with like his peers that I think that's going to be the really fun thing about him in 2024 is now it feels like he can explore that. And I'm interested to see, like, all right, now obviously he has beef against Kato, but what is going to happen when Kaito Nagano comes back? And now, like, how is he going to play into these kind of things? Like, we're starting to, like, I feel like that the big story of the last like 10 days is kind of finally getting the sort of identity for the 2021s and 2022 kids.
I think that's a great point, is it does feel like we're slowly, maybe not slowly rather, but maybe we're just simply transitioning into a stage where guys that have been in a certain place are not going to be in that place at this time next year, at least ideally. So it's been good movement up and down the card. I'm thrilled as we head into the end of the year. You know, December is very busy. I was just looking at the calendar as it conflicts with my personal schedule, and I was like, oh, that first week of December is not a good one for me, but I will catch up, I will binge watch, and I am very excited for what's to come in December with Dragon Gate.
Absolutely. Let me run through the full Korakuen card real quick before we move on and start to wrap things up. We talked about most of it. Otherwhere on the undercard, they open with Daiki Yanagiuchi versus Punch Tominaga. Punch won with 6 minutes with a PT kick. Big Boss Shimizu and UT versus Ginki Horiguchi and Takashi Yoshida. It was Shimizu with the power boss bomb on Horiguchi. And then we had a veterans match. Susumu Mochizuki, Yazushi Kanda, and proud Hanshin Tiger fan Kenichiro Arai coming out and not just the jersey, but the yellow tights supporting the Hanshin Tigers Japan Series win. That didn't help them out. They still lost to Ultimo, Don Fuji, and Kagatora. Kaga Nui on Yazushi Kanda. Kagatora has gotten a couple guys with that on the undercard. Something maybe not worth paying a pen in, but don't act surprised when he gets like a big flash pen with that soon. And then we had an 8-man tag. Yamato, Dragon Kid, Shuichi Kondo, and Eita versus Naruki Doi and Gold Class. He came out with Gold Class, not a member of Gold Class. Benkei got the pen, or got pinned by Yamato with the Frankensteiner of the Almighty. That match had a little bit more heart than I expected.
It was a good little time. I loved the spot. I can't think of the move name right now. What's the move Kondo does where he's standing in front of the guy and he grabs him by the head and throws him over his body?
Oh, the hair whip move?
Yeah, I call it the hair whip too. That's what I always have in my notes. So Minoru's on the mat and he does that with Eita, and then he does that with Dragon Kid. And then he has this great moment with Yamato where he and Yamato stare each other down, and Yamato's like, all right, you know, I guess we're going to do this. And then he does it to Yamato. That is a goaltending on the Philadelphia 76ers. Sorry, we're coming down to the closing wire here. I got distracted. He and Yamato do it, and then Minoru moves out of the way. It was just fantastic. It was a classic Dragon Gate spot.
Yeah, it was a good bit of fun there. It just was like a good undercard. When a Punch Tominaga opener did not completely ruin me because Daiki went for it the entire match. It was a good, it was a solid cork in the, and yet another one in the streak that they've had that they really were able to do this. I'm just, for my own edification case, I pulled up one of the few Wikias that have moves, and Shuichi Kondo used a shooting star press allegedly once in 2010 as a finishing move.
I need to see the tape on that. That sounds like a project for Alan Forel. I'm sure he knows.
Yep. Part of me saying this was hoping that Alan would notice me say this.
That's in his wheelhouse. You know, we've all got our specialty, and that is up his alley.
Yeah. If there's one person I know that we could trust with the secrets of, you're going to know where a Shuichi Kondo shooting star press attempt was, it would be him for that. But it was a pretty solid Korakuen Hall show altogether. We talked a little bit about this when we were talking about the 8-man tag elevation matches. Of course, we've talked a lot about the Takahiro Yamamura in 2017 as an elevation match, and really an elevation match, an elevation night. The untouchable Spike Mohicans versus Speed Muscle match as well. Okay, so what other ones do you have on your list? I've got a couple great elevation matches in Dragon Gate history, because it feels like this is the unique thing to this promotion.
Yeah. So again, in the same vein as that Tanaka 8-man, I would have the ones you listed. I would have Jackie Funky Kamei and Jason Lee versus Shun Monte from Kobe World 2022. I think that was the match where they said, this is the Jackie Funky Kamei match. He's wrestler A going into the match. He's wrestler B coming out of it. And I think they succeeded there. I mentioned Takahiro Yamamura earlier. The other one that I wanted to mention, I think it was successful in the moment. It failed in the long term, but it's a match that I rewatched today, and it is just so marvelous. And they set this guy up for success, and it just didn't work out. But Shima and June, all caps June from the T2P class, versus Magnum Tokyo and Milano Collection AT, October 15th, 2003. June was a new member, rather, to Crazy Max. He teams with Shima, and you get three of the four big dogs in there, and then June, and he looks like a big dog for that match, and that match only.
Yeah, that is a one-match comp tape for him. So one of the a one that I had, Case, that I kind of want your thoughts on this one, because I view it as an elevation match, like in the vein of Jackie Funky Kamei walked into Kobe World Kenan Hall last year and exited a different person. I want to take you to 2011. The return of Akira Tozawa from Excursion, the Gate of Maximum show from June 8th. Blood Warriors, the debuting Blood Warriors, Akira Tozawa, BB Hulk, Shima, Naruki Doi, Zushi Kanda defeat Gamma, Masaki Mochizuki, Masato Yoshino, Shingo Takagi, Yamato of Junction 3. And this was one where I think that although this was the heel turn for Hulk and he is elevated with this, Akira Tozawa comes back to a shocked crowd and leaves after stacking up Gamma's body and becoming a whole new person, and the company changes thereafter.
I think that's a great comp. That's not one I thought of.
Yeah, it was just one of the ones where I was just like, can you argue this as being the big elevation one? Because this wasn't necessarily the performance. This was just pure booking got Tozawa to them.
Yeah, no, that's you're exactly right.
So those were a couple more of those. A couple other notes before we got out of here. Naruki Doi, I don't think this got officially announced, but it looks like that probably DDT will be announcing this soon. Takeshita is back in the States for his current tour with All Elite Wrestling. He has mentioned that, and Doi responded that one of the people that he's interested in seeing DDT now and getting a match with is Naruki Doi, since Naruki Doi has started to freelance. And really, DDT, other than like the big Dragon Gate shows and like the constant Dragon Gate shows, I would say DDT is kind of Doi's home. And it looks like they are building that one up in the future.
Yep, that is good stuff there. Obviously, just to backtrack for one second, if you can think of any other made man matches like we were just talking about, yeah, please let us know in the Discord, because I'm curious and I'm trying to put together a little list of those. But as for Doi Takeshita, that match sounds awesome, and I hope DDT does it, and I hope it is as good as we want it to be, because Doi's had a very good year and Takeshita's Takeshita, so good on DDT for doing that.
Yeah, it's something where I look at that, and although that they're going to want to do that in Osaka, I really want them to keep that match in. I want them to keep that match in Tokyo. That just seems to make a lot of sense. I've been trying to stall a little bit, Case. I'm trying to look up the exact match and the date for this, but I had another one I was going to throw at you to see if you bought it for Rocket Ship Made Men matches. If you give me just one second.
Yeah, please dig in, because I said earlier, you know, I think it's one of those things that Dragon Gate does, and they do it better than anybody, and I struggle to think outside of the basic Young Lion system, where, you know, I can think of like even like Okada Young Lion matches. Like, they, you know, there were times where it's like, oh, this guy's going to be a guy. You know, you think about Young Kenta and stuff like that. I just don't think any other promotion does it the way Dragon Gate does it, where it's ham fisted and it's over the top, but it's effective. And they have this track record of being really effective with it. I just think it's such an interesting topic.
What was the... Okay, now I can't find the show. Wasn't there a match that both L. Lindemann and Katoka jumped in on as millennials? Yeah. No, that this was exactly what I was thinking about. All right. My last one, case for you. This was from January 16th, 2015. This one, not as strong, not as made men, but at least for two people on the roster, this was their big step up and really made them, especially one of them, in the eyes of the Tokyo audience. This was Mad Blanky, Shima, Cyber Kong, Dr. Muscle, Gamma, Kness, and Yamato versus Millennials, Eita, T-Hawk, UT, Yosuke, Santa Maria, and new members as of that night, Katoka and Yuga Hayashi, who would rename himself as L. Lindemann after this match.
What was the date on that?
This was January 16th, 2015.
Oh, man, I don't remember that. I mean, I watched it, I reviewed. Well, I don't think I reviewed that. I was doing reviews as July. Man, yeah. I don't remember that.
This was the first Quark in the year that had a pretty, I will say this.
Can you go through the card? Can you just read that card for me?
I want to go through this card because this one night, a Dream Key tournament is insane. So it opened with...
Was this the... Did they do Shimizu and Susumu on this show?
Yes, they did.
Okay,
yes,
sorry. Yeah. Okay, I remember this show. I don't remember this match. Okay, go ahead.
So this show it opened with Jimmy's versus Unaffiliated. This was Ginky Horiguchi, Kakutora, and Sairio defeat Katoka, Super Shisa, and then Yuga Hayashi.
That's my super team right there, Katoka, Shisa, and Yuga Hayashi. That's my, you put a certain dollar figure in my wallet, and boy, are you going to see that trio a lot of Japan.
And then you throw Yuga into the van and tell him to go get his hair dyed.
Yep. That's coming to Basement Monstar near you. the K-Slow Produce Show, Kotoka, Super Shisa, and the man formerly known as Yuga Hayashi, they are a trio once again.
You know, that's not too far. We could get this on a Glate show if you're okay with doing a 60 seconds reunion, and we can get a little bit Shiba on Shiba action.
The fact that the concept of a 60 seconds reunion is so foreign to me. I can't embrace that.
So the rest of the show, we had Jimmy Kanda, Mr. QQ, Naoko Tanizaki, Tonyaka, Dolphin, almost said that perfectly, which I've been proud of, defeat Mondai Ryu and Punch Tominaga of Mad Blanky, or open the Dreamgate number one contendership one night tournament, Shimizu over Don Fuji in 2 minutes and 56 seconds. Jimmy Susumu defeats Kenichiro Arai. So if you're wondering who are the other people in this tournament, Kenichiro Arai, Dia Hearts defeat Monster Express. This was Tozawa, Shingo, and Sachi team. And then you had the 5-on-4 Mad Blanky defeat the Millennials, and then they bring out their new Millennials members, Katoka and Yuga Hayashi, to defeat Mad Blanky on the path towards the end of Mad Blanky.
That's crazy. I don't remember this show outside of Shimizu versus Susumu, which was awesome.
Great match.
I don't remember the rest of this show. You know, I really liked a lot of the Dial Hearts Monster Express stuff, but I don't recall that six man. I don't recall Mad Blanky Millennials. This is so weird. I mean, obviously it's January 2015 Cork, and who the hell cares, but I'm pretty good at this stuff, and I'm surprised I don't remember this show.
Yeah, I feel like the big thing that was talked about at the time was, oh, they did the whole Katoka and L. Lindemann dyed their hair during the show to pull off the turn. Like, that was kind of like the big thing. So they came out in, like, brand new gear and new hair color during that.
People thought Lindemann ruined his career when he changed his name, because Yuga Hayashi was such a good name. Hayashi's very chantable. And he went to Lindemann. And look, I wish you would have changed it back at some point, but he's turned out okay.
It's worked out for him. Like, if you were to tell me on January 16th, 2015, okay, so here are the next 8 years for L. Lindemann. I feel like I've been like, you know, that's weird. Like,
it's not how I drew it up. Yeah, but...
Yeah. That sounds like that some stuff's going down. And then I'll be like, yeah, some stuff went down.
Oh, you have no idea.
let me tell you about what you discover at WrestleMania weekend.
I was just about to say, you'll never believe what Mike heard at WrestleMania weekend.
So, but that was just one more big elevation match we wanted to touch on. But yeah, no, I would have to go back in time and explain a lot of things. Like, all right, so here's who Tony Khan is.
Yeah. So you thought Shingo was good now. Just yeah. You wait a decade.
Yeah. Akira Tozawa, yeah, no, he's still doing that. Don't worry. I just want you to know that he's alive. He's okay. But just delete him.
Just dead to me.
But I mean, he's finally like showing out now.
Oh, well, okay. He's got all that potential. Yeah, Triple H has really unlocked something.
The thing that I loved about that GIF before we go, because you know what's the number one thing that I love about that GIF more so than anything else?
What's that?
It is the exact same Akira Tozawa babyface comeback routine that he's done basically since he turned face and started.
Oh, yeah, no, it's great. It's the same thing. It's not even potential. He's just doing the same thing he did a decade ago.
Yeah, no, literally, it's like, oh, yeah, no, he's doing the, okay, he's going underneath the legs.
Yep, crawling under, German suplex, got it, okay.
Got it. There you go, yep.
It's like I always talk about how I could do Ultimo's comeback, like how I could feed and bump for him, and so the Tozawa comeback's the same thing. I've seen it a million times. I know exactly what he does.
But at the same time, it was a little affirming knowing that it is the exact same thing that we knew it was.
Yep. Yeah. So, on-air production meeting, Mike, you're not available next Tuesday. I'm not available next Monday. So, I think we're going to take next week off for the holidays.
Mm-hmm. That works for me.
We do have a Hall of Fame issue coming out this Friday. So, listeners of the show, allow us to be a week late on our Hall of Fame takes because I have a very bad feeling about this ballot. And this is my platform, and I will want to talk about it. So hang tight with me, everybody, and we'll see. I feel like it was like 2020, we said the same thing. We're like,
yeah.
Well, we'll see the results of the election. It'll kind of determine our mood for the next week. I'm in a very similar spot this year with Dave's Hall of Fame. this is my 2020 election.
For a second, I had to go like, who was in the observer ballot in 2020?
No. presidential, the people that run the country, the free world.
I know that's what had me laughing was like, why did I go with that? You Russell brain sick person.
Yeah, look, things in America, they're gonna work out for me kind of no matter what. I've got the right disposition where I'm gonna be fine. But the Observer Hall of Fame, I could really get fucked here. I'm not happy about it.
Hey, we will be back in a couple weeks to talk all about that. And Dragon Geek going into their busy December, it so happens that there's really not a lot happening on the Dragon Gate Network in November as well. So
no, I think there's one more broadcast, and it's like it's the Genki Homecoming Show.
Yeah, it's Genki's Homecoming Show at the end of the month.
That cool building in Kumamoto.
Yeah, I wonder if Mrs. Horiguchi is there, because she used to always bring like be the person that would like, because she has like a cafe in Kumamoto that like she always would like bring like and like set up like the snack table. I wonder if she's there. I hope they get footage if she's there.
I hope so too.
But we'll be back in a few weeks to talk about that. You can follow us on Twitter at OpenVoiceGate. Case is at _ in your case. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for coming to OpenVoiceGate. We'll be back with you next time. Take care.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.